Welcome to the Humans for SDGs podcast,
where we feature everyday individuals who are taking action for the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
These 17 Sustainable Development Goals aim to transform the world by year 2030 by eradicating poverty, protecting the environment, achieving prosperity, and ensuring peaceful and just societies through multi-sector partnerships. This podcast is brought to you by the 2030 Youth Force in the Philippines.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is the 2030 Youth Force in the Philippines, and we welcome you to another episode of Humans for SDGs. I'm Brex.
I'm Aya.
And today we have a very special guest. He is the Disease and Surveillance Officer in the Department of Health, a registered nurse, and a Youth Force member advocate. Andre Dominic Nico Talaga.
Nico, so yes. You're working with the Department of Health, a very crucial government agency, especially in this time of COVID-19. Can you tell us more about the work that you do?
I'm in the Department of Health Region 4A, and as you all know, our first disaster has been the eruption of the Taal volcano. So since January, we've been going to the field for surveillance of the diseases, of outbreaks, and clustering of other infections for the region. So we've been working tirelessly since January. So basically, our work is we monitor everyone's health, especially now in the times of COVID-19. It's very important that we have to identify every patient, every case, so we could contact them and trace who are their close contacts, so we could stop the infection or the passing of the disease.
So that's interesting. So you have been pretty much in and out ever since that the Taal volcano exploded in January. Has work in your field gradually changed, or ever since January it just totally changed and now you're out, you're always out, but on a normal basis you're more of in the office?
I can go home in the past months, unlike right now, especially when the community quarantine started. So before the community quarantine started, I was quarantined because I became a suspect case myself, because we were going on the field and we don't know if we were already exposed with COVID-19. So I had symptoms, I had fever, I had cough and cold, so I was tested, and thankfully it came out negative. The night I learned about the result, I already went here in the office because we only have 10 people in our unit. One less people would be really a burden in our unit. So after that, I've been here in the office since March 25. The workload has been really draining because our situation is not getting better. They may tell the media, they may tell everyone that the curve is flattening or whatsoever, but the reality is we're really not there yet.
Yeah, I can understand that. Nico, maybe for some of us, we just hear about the numbers, but we don't really understand what the numbers tell us or what's the story behind these numbers. And when you say you're a suspect case, you're showing symptoms, you'll be quarantined yourself. But when you say testing, can you tell us how the testing goes? Because a lot of people have been demanding for mass testing. So maybe you can tell us what exactly goes on when one gets tested.
As for the testing, we have criteria in released by the central office. So most of the patients we test are close contacts of the confirmed cases. When you say close contacts, these are the people you work or you've been with during the time period you had the symptoms for COVID-19. For example, we're in our same room. I got tested positive for COVID-19. Then you and Brex would be my close contacts. So whether or not you would have symptoms, you will be tested because you've been with me. And as far as the testing goes, the testing is kind of tedious because we'll be swabbing you or a case through the nose and through the mouth. So imagine a pencil that long, a thin one and a thick one. A thin one for the nose, so we want to reach the thin lining of the wall in the nose. Then for the mouth swab, it's the lining in the side before your throat. It's the lining there.
Is it painful?
More of irritating, not painful. And it depends on the nurse or whoever tests you. Some have heavy hands, some have light hands.
So what's it like out there? Like, how many people are tested per day? Are people all lined up in the testing center?
Actually,
there?
In the provinces, we go to the houses of those who needs to be tested for us to be able to prevent further infection to others who are not sick. When it comes to if there are lots of people to be tested, we'd have them queue with all the precautions, the distancing and all. I remember our record testing The highest number we had tested were a team of two. We collected specimens for at least 50 to 60 people in one go.
Nico, tell us about your experience being in the front lines and knowing the numbers, the stories behind it. What is it like for you? And maybe you can tell us how you're managing or how you're coping with stress, or maybe do you have anxiety? How do you deal with all that's happening?
Actually, I've been really, really frustrated on what's happening in the Philippines because, as you all know, even right now in the time of this pandemic, the Philippine government has always been political, tackling this type of problem. They have not been doing what needs to be done. These are my opinions. That's what's making me mad right now, because during the time when it was already February, we've been suggesting, we've been telling them to do this and to do that, but everyone in our government was not listening, especially when we said that we had to cut our flights, we had to monitor these people, we had to contact this and that, but they were not listening. They were saying, oh, it's okay, we should not cause panic, we should not cause this, we should not cause that. And now look at where we are right now, and really everyone's stressed, and the burden of that is not with them, it's not on them, it's on the people that's actually working on the ground level. And people have been burned out. I have workmates who have already resigned because they got already tired. We have 4 to 5 hours of sleep every night because we need to do reports from this government agency to this government agency for those who are just listening at the numbers. That's what's really happening right now.
That's interesting, because not just in the Philippines, but really across the world, you're hearing about the shortcomings of the government response. But on the other hand, you're also hearing about how non-government organizations and volunteers are really trying to form a community, in a sense. How are you seeing this? What are the major initiatives, I think, of non-government and volunteers? And I guess, where do you think are the gaps still?
Actually, I've been seeing a lot more response from non-government agencies versus the government agencies. If you could see, there are lots of people who are creating face shields, trying to procure masks for our frontliners, trying to provide food, which should have been what the government does. Maybe that's the big gap of it all. They just cling on to this bayanihan trait of us Filipinos, because we don't want anyone to be left behind. That's why when we see someone suffering, we do initiatives, we do this, we do that. But in general, it should have been done by our government. That's why I really think about those people that says that, why should we blame the government in what the people are experiencing? Because they're there for a reason, and the reason is for them to take care of their constituents. That's why we really are also having a hard time controlling this pandemic, because if the government would provide everything, if the government would give what the people need on a daily basis or a weekly basis, they would not go out of their home. For those who are working on a day-to-day basis, who get paid day by day, they would not seek employment in these times if they have something to feed or they have some money to use.
So, Nico, aside from the government, what would be your recommendations, or maybe more like a wish list for the government, for the civil society, and for people who are in their homes maybe listening to us? What would be your wish list as to contributions that other sectors can still give, that they can still put on the table to help us fight the pandemic?
Actually, my biggest wish is for people to really follow the rules right now, because we are in a community quarantine for a reason. We don't want you to go here, to go there. It's really a drastic measure for us not to be able to infect others or to lower our numbers. Because the real picture here right now is our hospitals are full. We have hard times of referring clients, referring patients in dire need of hospital care. So you staying at home would really be a big help so that the virus would not pass on to others. Maybe that's the biggest thing all of us can do.
We hear a lot about that, about how everyone is just trying to distance themselves from one another, whether you're family, whether you're a loved one, whether you're not. I heard earlier a very disheartening, I think, story about how this father in one family, he found out he had COVID. His son came up to him when he was about to go into the ambulance to get treatment. The son was trying to hug him, and the dad said, "No, don't touch me." The following day, they find out that the father has passed away, and that's the last that the son never saw of his dad. There are a lot of these very, very sad stories, and a lot hits home. So I'm really wondering, this is going to be an experience that will carry over throughout the next months, throughout the next years? How do you see society at large changing?
Actually, the biggest learning the society should get from this pandemic is to value our time more, value our close people in our lives, because we don't know if that people would die tomorrow or now. Because really, it's really sad to die in these times, because if you die right during this pandemic, there will be no burial ceremony. It's either you be cremated or you be buried within 12 hours when you die. So maybe we need to value everything we have in life right now.
Nico, I am curious. You're in the health sector. You're a young person yourself. Tell us about what motivates you, or actually what got you started in, you know, choosing this sector to work in. And yeah, what keeps you going every day?
Actually, it's more on helping people when it comes to health. I think I do best if I am in health. I've been dreaming about going into public health since I was in high school. It was a dream come true to be working in the Department of Health right now. And I see myself going long way here in our department. The mere fact that we could transfer patients, we could calm them down if they have queries, even if I could just help a single patient a day, that would re-energize me to do work more and to strive to a better healthcare system for our country. When time comes that our generation are the ones who are seated as secretaries, as undersecretaries, as senators, even president, we are the ones who are awakened on what to do and what should not be done. And hopefully, Jose Rizal is right, that we really are the hope of our nation.
We saw a Facebook post and it was your birthday. You mentioned that you've been there for 2 months now, living in the office basically, and your mom was able to visit you after that long stretch. What was that experience like?
The last time I was home was my sister's birthday around March 13. Then I had to be quarantined here in Quezon City from March 15 onwards. So that's the last time I saw my family. Then my birthday was last May 3. My mother was texting me the night before, what would I cook for my office mates? I said, I would just cook them carbonara and I would prepare some viand for them. Then the day of my birthday, I was attending an online worship and my mom was calling my other phone, so I was not able to answer it. Then lo and behold, my mother was here in our pantry while I was cutting some mushrooms and chicken for my carbonara. I saw my mother and what she said really broke my heart during that time and wanted and made me cry. The moment she saw me, she just put down the cake she brought for me. Then she asked me, Kuya, can I hug you? And that really took a toll on me, because that's how it's gonna be with my work and my family. Because I don't want to go home, not because it's far. I don't want to go home because I'm always exposed to unknown patients, because there are asymptomatic cases right now. So you can't know, really be sure if the person you're talking to is a COVID patient or not. So I don't want them to be at risk, especially if they're living with my grandparents who are more susceptible to the infection. But that really made me work harder, because what she said struck something in me. Because I was telling her that I was really, really, really tired. I was crying and telling her that. And what she said was this: if you did not told me that you were happy with your job, I would have asked you to quit, to look for another job abroad or here who would pay you better, who would give you incentives better, who would have a better working environment. But you said you loved your job. That's why we're just here praying for you and we're here to support you.
Nico, you know, this is a wonderful story because it's a story of someone who's working in the front lines, being part of a crucial government agency in this time. But what's more fascinating for me is that despite these challenges and personal struggles, I heard you're also doing work outside your day job to actually help other people. Can you tell us about this initiative that you've started with some friends?
These are friends from the same organization, 2030 Youth Force. It was in the early weeks of March and April. So we wanted to do something that would help a lot of those people that are really not seen, because most of the help is being given to the frontliners. I don't have any problem with that. But we also have to look at the other sectors or the other people of our community who are not being touched by this help. So what we had, or what we conceptualized, was to have a donation drive called Biyahe Ni Juan for our fellow jeepney tricycle drivers and operators who've been jobless because their income is based on their trips. And right now, we don't have public transportation. So I don't know how are they going on in their day-to-day lives. So that's why we started the initiative to have a donation drive for them and their families.
Can you tell us how other people can maybe help and support this initiative?
You could actually donate goods. We need masks or food, rice, canned goods. Then we're trying to contact some local farmers so we could help the farmers and at the same time the drivers, because we want to provide fresh food and not always the processed goods for their families. And we would be hitting two birds with one stone. We're helping the farmers because we've been hearing a lot of struggles on their end. Their goods are not being sold. You could also donate in kind.
Is there a contact number or a website that we could reach you?
You could message me on Facebook. It's Andre Dominic. If you would want to donate, if you would want to help or any form of help, feel free to message me.
Maybe you can share some insights or a learning from your experiences. What has this pandemic taught you? Or some reflections that you would want to share with our listeners?
I've realized that we've been taking life for granted. We've been too lazy to take care of our planet, to take care of our society, to take care of everything. I really have this faith. When the time comes, we could do change. We could do a whole lot of change to help not only us, not only our generation, but also the generation to come. Because if you won't do anything about it, maybe we don't have any Philippines to take care of anymore.
It's a wonderful insight. And for me, really, this pandemic has taught us to reflect and to look at how we've been living our lives. And it's also, I think, a call to action for us all. Thank you, Nico, for joining us. We're going to hear more stories of humans acting for the SDGs in our next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Humans for SDGs podcast. This has been Brex Arevalo.
This has been Aya Antonio.
Please tune in to our next episode, where we will be featuring more individuals who are taking action for the UN SDGs.
This podcast is brought to you by the 2030 Youth Force in the Philippines. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/YouthForcePH.